Welcome. The Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division will come to order. We're going to start. We're doing an overview today with the DNR, but we're going to start and just ask our fiscal analyst, Dan Mueller, to give us a very brief outline of our committee budgets. Very brief. And we'll go from there. Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, the first document I'll go through, hopefully it's in front of all the members, is a document. It's a piece of PowerPoint presentation, but I didn't bring the file, so we'll just go through the slides quick. It's called Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources. Some of the key characteristics of this budget division, most of the numbers I'm going to talk about were the numbers that were spent in the previous biennium. About $1.3 billion for all the agencies in this previous biennium was spent in our budget area. One of the biggest new initiative that I guess we had last year was the Clean Water Legacy that we talked about last week here, and that was about $25 million. About 75% of the money that is appropriated and spent in this area comes from non-general fund sources, meaning federal funds, special revenue funds, game and fish funds, natural resources funds, which are mostly all dedicated, and we'll quickly go over some of those funds here in the next couple pages. On the next page is a quick overview of all the agencies in this area, in this budget division, and the total spending for those agencies. Now, again, this is based on the previous biennium, and this table shows the general fund appropriated to each of the agencies in this area, the total all other funds, and that includes federal, and then the last column is the two columns combined. So we have the PCA, the Minnesota Zoo, the DNR, the Metro Parks, which is operated through Met Council, the Minnesota Conservation Corps, Bowser, as we call it, which is the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Science Museum is appropriated in this budget division, the LCCMR, which is the new name for the LCMR, the Public Utilities Commission, and the Energy and Telecommunications area of the Commerce Division. Again, it shows the about $1.3 billion of total spending that occurs in all these agencies, which amounts to about $326 million of general fund dollars for the previous biennium. The next slide shows all that spending broken down by fund. Again, the general fund only makes up about 25% of the spending in this area. Federal funding, some of those didn't show up too well in the copying, but the other big pie piece on the top left is federal funds.
Mr. Mueller, you mean that big black corner of the pie? Almost?
Yes.
Okay.
That's federal funds.
Yes.
And the one between remediation and the GNF, which is game and fish, is the Natural Resources Fund. On to the next page. I'll quickly go through what some of those funds mean and in our area. The Special Revenue Fund is largely a kind of a catch-all fund that all agencies use for various fees and services that they charge to either outside agencies, usually for a lot of services that do not require their own separate fund or accounts. But one of the bigger ones in that area is the Minnesota Zoo entry fees are collected and counted within the Special Revenue Fund. And then a lot of that is collected and then sent right back to that agency for the same services. The Environmental Fund is largely a fund under the PCA. It actually makes up about 39% of their total operating budget. It's about $115 million per biennium. The major sources of that fund are solid waste fees, and there's also a new motor vehicle transfer fee, which will start counting this fiscal year 08 that starts coming into that fund that when we get into the PCA budget later, we'll have to talk about how that kind of saved that fund, I think, going into the future. So Like I said, most of that fund is spent in the all that fund is spent in the PCA and mostly in the air and water areas. The remediation fund, which amounts to about $96 million in the biennium. With that, you might want to think in your head as largely a super fund. It's a landfill and cleanup fund. And that's spent almost entirely in the PCA. Department of Ag gets a little bit of that over in Senator Vickerman's budget area. And the DNR also spends a little bit in that area. The Natural Resources Fund is the fund within the DNR that largely funds the parks and trails. They get their money from the parks and trails fees and stickers, the snowmobile and ATV and boat registration. The income tax checkoff that you see on your income tax returns goes into an account in a natural resources fund. A lot of their forestry services happen there. On to the next page. Again, continuing some brief overview of some of the funds. The Game and Fish Fund spent about $182 million in the previous biennium. That is largely the hunting and fishing licenses and fees, and the stamps go into that fund and also some federal dollars. And the uses, again, go mostly for fishing and wildlife management and enforcement. And there's some land acquisition that happens in there, but a lot of the land acquisition that the DNR has actually happens through the bonding bills. The Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund is the fund that the LCCMR uses for their programs. It is funded through the lottery proceeds. 40% of the lottery proceeds go into a trust fund, and then 5.5% of that amount is available each year for projects. And starting this year, the LCCMR is going on an annual basis instead of a biannual basis. So we'll see a bill from them each year. Federal funds in this area, I said federal funds make up about a fourth of our spending, and we don't really have a whole lot of control over that, but we can. It's about $293 million in the previous biennium. A lot of that actually goes into the commerce and public utilities area, especially in commerce. All the energy assistant programs are now in this budget area, and that accounts for a large part of our federal funds. Some other funds that we in the fiscal analyst area call sort of off the books that we don't track necessarily in the consolidated fund statements, but we might, what we will see in some bills around here are Great Lakes Protection Account, which is under LCCMR, the LACON account, which is under LCMR, Reinvest in Minnesota, the Public Facilities Authority funds. Some of that flows through Pollution Control Agency, the clean water thing. So some of these accounts you might see in bills and proposals, but they aren't necessarily tracked under the Department of Finance in a total that we might see in, like, the governor's budget and things like that. So it makes things a little bit confusing sometimes, but I think in our budget overview that us analysts were giving the other day to new senators, our lead fiscal analyst said there are over 130 funds actually in the state under the state purview, and only about 35 of them are really counted under the Department of Finance's consolidated fund statement. So sometimes we do operate under some other funds and move some money around, but they're not always counted in the big scheme of things. So it makes this budget division a little bit more tricky than some other areas. The last two, on the last page, the two slides, the top slide shows, it's trying to break up the spending into some other areas. The difference between direct appropriations and open and stat. Direct appropriations are the numbers that we'll see in any appropriation bill that comes out of this budget division, which amounts to about $748 million the previous biennium. So what this is trying to show is only about 56% of the money that actually gets spent by the agencies in this budget area is appropriated directly by this committee. Another 44% of it happens through either federal funds or other open and statutory spending, which means it'll happen whether the legislature takes action or not. and a lot of dedicated funds. So that's all that chart is really trying to show. And it breaks the spending up again by general fund, other funds, and federal funds. The last slide here is sort of a overview of just the general fund appropriations going back a couple bienniums for all the agencies in this area. The last line there for Commerce, since that is part of a broken-up agency, some of those numbers might be off a little bit because it's kind of going back in the past. It's hard to pull out just how much general fund dollars went to that to part of the agency, but I think I have a pretty good number there for that. But as you can see, general fund dollars in this budget area has been going down from $376 million in 2002-03 biennium, and then sort of some of the budget shortfalls hit the state. And as you can see, the general fund spending has been going down in this budget area. It doesn't mean all spending has been going down. Some of this is a result of some funding moving out of general fund and into other funds. A big example of that is in PCA 2 years ago, where a pretty big chunk of money was taken, was moved out of the general fund and into the environmental fund. And also the revenue was moved over to that area too. So there are things like that that happen when we try comparing bienniums to bienniums that are a little difficult sometimes to compare apples to apples all the time. But overall, general fund spending in this area has been going down.
All right. Thank you, Senator Sexhug.
Madam Chair, the one you just mentioned there, the PCA, where it went in a designated fund, about how much money was that? Remember?
I believe that was about $7 or $11 million per year, and it was based on a portion of the solid waste tax that used to go into the general fund. We moved that revenue source over to the environmental fund and then also moved the spending over to the environmental fund. The last part of the handout is more of a spreadsheet. And this is, again, just some of the same information that was in the previous handout, but this more shows it how some other spreadsheets that you'll see from me later in the session will look. This is showing the previous biennium actual spending by agency, by fund, and then the next three columns show the November forecast about what these agencies would spend based on the November forecast for the biennium that we're looking at. So the governor's budget and our budgets in the future, you can either look at them two ways. There's look at them versus the previous biennium spending or look at them based on the forecast. As we talk about the surplus and everything that's available around here, that's always based on the November forecast, 08, 09. So, but some people like talking about how much we spend versus the previous biennium. As you'll see in the total, if you look at the second page, total spending in this area, actually in the November forecast for 08-09, is actually less than the previous biennium. So the forecasted programs actually have less spending than what we actually spent total last year. Some of that is because the clean water money was all one time in the previous biennium. So that kind of skewed things towards the previous biennium. And other programs, most notably under the PCA, things like the remediation fund, they had the authority to spend a lot more money when it became available last biennium than what they're forecasting in the future. So they show, you know, almost $18 million drop in spending in the remediation fund, the PCA. So that's just a quick overview of sort of all the agencies and funding areas in this budget division. And I guess one of the things I want members to really keep an eye on and think about is there's a lot more going on in this budget area than just what happens in the general fund. There's this 25% of the spending in this budget area happens in the general fund, but the general fund is the only fund that we constitutionally have to balance, and what gets the most news coverage and talked about in the area. But there's a lot of things that happen in this budget area that you can either find funding sources for or watch spending histories and everything on, other than just the general fund. And as we get into the agencies that are coming up, I think hopefully they spend a little bit of time talking about some of their other proposals or other programs that are non-general fund also.
Great. Well, thank you. Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Miller, I thought when you did that budget overview for legislators that there were some federal dollars that were direct appropriations in this department. But, I was thinking you mentioned that was clean water dollars, but, was it the fact then that they're paid for on this other sheet? You were saying they paid in one lump sum. Is that why it's in there, or is that in the PCA's budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Kubley, the federal funds, I guess, are never really directly appropriated. And in that budget overview that you were at, that we talked a little bit about, someone asked a question of whether more clean water funds were available through the federal government if we appropriated more clean water funds. And the answer is probably yes. And as we go along and maybe talk to PCA and Bowser, as we talk about our clean water proposals, we'll probably want to ask that. It doesn't mean we directly appropriate those federal dollars. It just might mean more federal dollars might become available that those agencies can spend. That's why I don't put any federal dollars under direct appropriations, because they don't necessarily appear in any of our appropriation bills.
Okay. So what they are doing in Washington certainly affects all of the agencies that we oversee, and it's helpful if we can try to get some kind of a handle on what to predict from Washington, if that's ever can be ever possible. Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Mr. Mueller, it's my understanding from your budget overview that you had done last week that even if you include all funds, it still amounts to 2% of Minnesota's budget, $50 billion or so. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I believe that's pretty close. Yeah, our general fund spending in this area amounts to about 1% of the total general fund spending in all of the budget areas. And our total spending for all funds, yeah, I think is about 2%, because a bigger part of our budget is non-general fund than other budget areas.
Members, especially new members to the division, I really want to encourage you to make use of our staff. Mr. Mueller really knows this budget well. And just if any of this is confusing, which it is to me, you can just go ask him questions anytime. So just know that you can make good use of the resources that we have here. So I encourage you to do that if you have questions. And I just want to also say two things. One is that I'm going to try to start this committee on time. So just be warned, the gavel will go down even if none of you are at the table, because we just have to keep things moving in an orderly process, and we're squeezed between a lot of things. There's other committees that start at 3 o'clock, so we need to stay on schedule as much as possible. Secondly, just a reminder for returning members, but for the new members in particular, if there's any paperwork that you receive in a committee that you want to save, put it in your brown folder. And is there, let's see, do we have something?
Save.
The one that says save, yeah. If you haven't already noticed that, just put them in there. And at the end of the committee, you can, anything that's left lying around, we will recycle and get rid of. But if you want to keep it, that's fine. Whatever you want to keep, we will keep for you in the folders. And you'll have it the next time you come back. With that, we're going to hear from the Department of Natural Resources today. And thank you for your patience. We have Commissioner Holston, as well as Deputy Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Bob Meyer. So welcome. We'll start with Commissioner Holston.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, I just wanted to stop in and introduce myself and talk to you and introduce the staff that you as members will be dealing with intimately over the next several months and throughout your legislative career, and who's managing the agency. So just take a few minutes. I have a meeting I have to get back to at the agency, so I'll just take a few minutes. I see a lot of familiar faces, members that we've worked with a lot over the over my career, both at DNR and as a legislative member, to the new members. I'm a former legislator. I spent 10 years in the House of Representatives, where I chaired the Environment Finance Committee over on the House side. Was asked to resign my seat and take a position as Deputy Commissioner of the DNR 4 years ago, which I did. So I've spent the last 4 years as deputy, spending a lot of time up here working on delivering the policy and budget, working with the legislature to create that and craft that over some very difficult times, some of the tough decisions we've had to make. You, even though you cumulatively are going to be spending not the lion's share of the state's budget, it's a relatively small piece, but it's probably one of the most complicated, as you've been finding out. With all the dedicated accounts, the specific funds, and each one of those accounts and funds have a lot of statutory requirements attached to them. So spend time in your statutes. I'd advise you to open those up regularly and take a look and see what strings have been attached. When you have people like Senator Frederickson, who are institutions here within this in these halls, you'll find that every fund, every piece of policy tends to have a history attached to it. And that history is unique and interesting and very diverse. But there is a historical understanding for why the legislature has done things or the agency has done things over the years and brought us to some of the things that we're going to be dealing with. But there are changes, and changes have to be made to deal with our new challenges, and we'll work with you and we'll help craft those budgets and policy directions that need to be crafted to affect those changes and take this state in the direction we want to see it to go. So we will work very closely with you. To that, we have a number of people here in the room who you need to get a face with a name, because upon those individual budgets, on those individual discussions you're going to be having, whether it's state parks or forestry enforcement, these individuals will be spending some time with you. Let's start over here. Kent Lacasmal is our Director of Waters. So if you have issues on surface water or groundwater, there's a tremendous resource there. Next to him is Marty Vadas. Marty Vadas administers our Lands and Minerals Division. So issues of real estate, transactions, something we're going to try to talk a little bit about this year, mining, that goes through through Marty's committee, or through his division. Behind him is Forrest Bowe. He's the newest director to be appointed. He's the director of our Trails and Waterways Division. So as you talk about boat landings and accesses, as you talk about bike trails or ATVs, that is the arena that Mr. Bowe oversees. Next to him is Dave Shad, who is the director of our Fish and Wildlife Division. And a lot of focus on hunting regs, habitat development is in through his arena. Other directors, I've got Colonel Mike Ham, who's the director of our enforcement division. So any law enforcement activity, we have our own law enforcement arm inside the Department of Natural Resources, guns and all. I've got Cortland Nelson, who is the director of our parks. We'll have some interesting, as you saw the news this weekend, we'll probably be having some interesting policy discussions about firewood and the results of those. And But all of our state parks administered through Cortland. Directors, I've got, Lee Fanmuller is the director of our ecological services. So in there is our non-game program, Chickadee Checkoff. Also, environmental review. Our SNA program is through Lee's shop. Dave Epperle is the director of our forestry division. Got significant issues going on in our forest industry right now. So you'll see as our budget comes through some significant activity proposals coming around forestry this year. Next to Dave is, I should have started there, but Lori Martinson. Lori Martinson is the new Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. On being appointed Commissioner, my first task was to identify a deputy. And Lori, who Lori served in many capacities within the agency. She understands across divisional lines because of some of her previous positions, being a special ops manager where she had to manage many different programs across divisional boundaries, so she's well-versed in all the divisions. But she also served as director of our Trails and Waterways Division, where she was asked to redesign that division. She made a lot of changes there and some budget changes as we've been dealing with grants. We have a lot of grant money that flows through that division, and she's been very instrumental in changes there. So I have a lot of confidence in her in stepping into that position. Traditionally, the deputy has been the one at the legislature, has been the face at the agency, both on policy and budgets. We're going to make some changes there in that matching up strengths. Lori's a very strong manager, but we have somebody in Bob Meyer who has done a very good job for us as an agency and working with the legislature to craft those budgets. So we've given Bob a promotion, and he will be handling our policy and budget initiatives up at the legislature this year. As for myself, I will be around more than you have seen the commissioner traditionally. I think it's important that is looking back over previous administrations and this last administration. I think we probably kept the commissioner away from the Capitol a little too much. So I will be here frequently, but not regularly. And so working with you and trying to solve some of those critical issues you're going to be working on. Also in the room, I have Denise Legato, who is our director of our HR services inside the agency. And to you, this committee, important is Denise Anderson, who is the director of our Office of Budget. She manages all the budget information for the agency. So this is an individual that you'll particularly want to get to know and spend some time with as you deal over the next couple months with budgets. We also have a significant activity that we've made some changes over the last 4 years in our regional offices. We've taken our regional directors and really elevated the status of them. We believe the decision-making, we want to push that out to the field as close as possible. So we're empowering our regional directors with more authority. To this region, in the central region, I have Joe Kurchinka here today. But in your individual, he's his office is in St. Paul, down on Warner Road, a couple miles from here. His region pretty much encompasses the Mississippi River, from St. Cloud down through the Twin Cities, down the Mississippi to the Iowa border. For others, it will be the city of New Ulm is our regional headquarters in the south. Bemidji is our regional headquarters in the northwest. And Grand Rapids is our regional office in the northeast. For those of you, you will have as legislators lots of, as you know or you are going to learn, a lot of issues within your communities and a lot of questions over the agency. We would like you to, as much as possible, deal with your local issues through our regional offices, through our regional director. That is one way of empowering them and helping us deliver those results back to your legislative districts and back to your regions is through those offices. We don't want you calling St. Paul. We do, but it would be helpful for you and us to help get that that perspective out there. Other note is I have Mark Matuska, who is a new hire for us. We brought him in as a regional He's a special assistance operations manager. He will be managing a lot of the policy initiatives that we are dealing with that work across divisional lines and work throughout the state. So he'll be a new face for us. And as we deal with issues, whether it's forest certification, ATVs, those cross many of our disciplines. And as you come up with new directions for us or as we come up with new directions that we need to implement, that's where this position comes in and is very important to us. So with that, Madam Chair, we will see you in the future.
All right. Thank you so much for being here and for the introductions. That's very helpful. All right. You're dismissed if you'd like to be. Or excused, I should say. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner. And Commissioner Meyer. Can we just call you Commissioner? Is that okay?
Yeah. Or Bob.
It's just
Bob
a lot
works
easier.
Too.
Bob's great.
That's great.
Madam Chair, members, thank you. For the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. The presentation that I have today, you have at your desk. There are copies up here for the audience as well if they have not gotten them. I'm going to try to get through an organizational kind of overview, talking about some of the budget issues that we're going to be facing. Mr. Mueller did a good job at giving you some background information on these, so I'm going to kind of go through those slides rather quickly. And also hope to introduce you to our performance measurement document, the strategic conservation agenda. And one of the things you're going to be seeing as we present our budget here in the coming weeks, we're going to be tying them back to outcomes and performance measurement as much as possible, letting you know what you will get for the dollars that you will ultimately allocate to the department, and give you an idea on where we're going and what we need to do related to the specific divisions that are out there. So we're going to talk about the mission, the structure, funding, touch on it, major issues and drivers, and then again talk about the delivery of conservation results. Our mission statement is rather a complex one, and one we take very seriously. Conserving and managing the state's natural resources, providing outdoor recreation opportunities, and providing for commercial uses of natural resources. These three issues we need to address all at the same time to provide a sustainable quality of life, but they can be rather complicated. Forestry management decisions not only deal with recreational access and habitat conservation issues, but also provide a real economic driver in the forested areas of our state for those families and towns and cities who need those things to take place. You can see in this document here, taking those three parts of our mission statement, where we basically fit in. In the middle is where we find ourselves, where we should be all the time, talking about the natural resource conservation issues while also dealing with recreational use and economic use. Sometimes this gets us into conflicts with other user groups, and we take those very seriously as well and work with all of our stakeholders to come up with solutions that everybody will be able to live with and move our state forward. Sharing our stewardship, working with partnerships that I talked about, working with the citizens, stakeholder groups, and all levels of government, we really utilize this in setting our priorities, providing technical assistance and managing our state's natural resources, and balancing those multiple interests in a way that they all benefit is something that we try to do. Commissioner Holston talked about our regional organization. You'll see those regions there, southern, central, northwest, and northeast region. Also consider myself as a place for you to go with your conflicts and questions that you have. If you need to, while I'm here, consider me your first point of contact, and we will get that to the regional directors as well. I'll be in the process of setting up meetings with all of you folks, so when we sit down on our one-on-one meetings, I can give you some more contact information, or you can find me directly through the state directory. Our organization structure, Commissioner Holston also talked about this. You can see our operations support and administration, then the actual divisions as well under regional operations, forestry, waters, lands and minerals, fish and wildlife, ecological services, trails and waterways, parks and recreation. They all work together to make sure we can protect and enhance the state of Minnesota's natural resources. Getting into the budgetary picture a little bit, our total appropriations, direct, open, and statutory by fund, last biennium totaled $680.2 million. And I'm hoping this is what Mr. Mueller has in his books as well. So this is a starting point for our preparation of next year's budget. Game and Fish Fund, 26.8%. Natural Resources Fund, about 21%. Special Revenue, 7% roughly. Federal, 5.9%. Environment, Natural Resources, roughly 5%. Other funds, a little bit more than 2%. And the general fund, 32.6%. These appropriations do include PILT, payment in lieu of taxes, which is something we'll be talking about here a little bit later on. Just going down, I'm going to go through these rather quickly since you kind of already talked about them. The Game and Fish Fund total appropriations, a little bit over $182 million. Of that, $108 came directly from license fees, your fishing licenses, your hunting licenses, bonus tags, anything that you purchase to participate in those activities goes into that account. The federal dollars, $37 million. Dingell Johnson and Pittman Robertson dollars, those are our matching funds we receive from the federal government. They're also in here. And you'll see $21 million roughly from payment or lottery in lieu of sales tax. I'm going to get into that in a minute here. But that's a payment that we receive that the legislature developed based upon the sales tax of lottery tickets. So this next slide talks about our natural resources funds appropriations. These are where all of your licenses for registration, snowmobiles, boats, ATVs, forestry funds are in here as well. These are all the dedicated accounts that have statutory authorities or statutory language attached to them. Very dedicated accounts can only be used for specific purposes that they're received from. Lottery and lieu sales tax is very important to us. You can see it's over $40 million per year. Back in 2003, the legislature made this policy change. This comes from the sales tax that is collected from the lottery based on lottery sales. Of that, it's distributed 27.57% to the general fund. The remaining 72.43% goes into the game and fish fund and into the natural resources fund, split evenly. And then from there, we call the game and fish fund the heritage enhancement dollars. On the natural resources fund side, it's split up. 22.5% go to the metro regional parks, 22.5% to the state parks and trails, 3% to local trail grants, and then the zoo receives a portion out of that as well. So you'll be seeing those dollars come through the budget and appropriated to those programs. More often than not, they come with special appropriation language on some of those dollars, but these program activities and these dollars are very important to our mission. Talking about the challenges that we face out there as a division and also as a department and also as a state, landscape change, we see the landscaping change due to habitat loss, forest fragmentation, land fragmentation, development, climate change issues that I know you're talking about and we're all concerned about, but how do those impact our lands is what we're tracking right now, or trying to track. And then on the bottom, providing the resources or our clients the ability to access and connect with the natural resources out there. The challenges we see, as I mentioned, the changing landscape patterns, changing development patterns, ownership, development issues, the threats from invasive species and disease. I know Commissioner Holson talked about the firewood ban, but really what we're trying to get our hands on is the threat of the emerald ash borer from coming into Minnesota and destroying our ash trees and our forests in Minnesota. So we need to act proactively on some of those things rather than reactively. And also clean water and sustainable use of water. These three issue drivers are really impacting our ability to provide our clients, our customers, with the natural resource activities or experiences they want to see. So we'll be focusing on these and talking about some possible solutions in the upcoming weeks. The document that I also had distributed to you is the Strategic Conservation Agenda. This is our fourth edition of this report. And you'll see it contains 90 indicators with targets that we've been tracking. This document has been developed to clearly state priorities in specific and measurable terms, to measure our progress, and to clarify our expectations with our stakeholders and also the legislature. This report will be updated in March of 2007, and it's also available on the internet as well. In your report, you'll see a bookmarker that has the web address also, so you can go back and look at the previous editions of this report and see how they've changed. We talked a little bit about the program, so we don't need to talk about that. I'll get into operations support a little bit more, which is one of it's a division that kind of has a bunch of our bureaus in there, so we'll touch base on that. So moving into fish and wildlife, the DNR serves 2.1 million anglers, almost 600,000 hunters and trappers, and 2.2 million wildlife viewers. We also work with 1,700 commercial fishery operators and over 2,000 resorts and related tourist businesses. Some of the core functions in fish and wildlife include the conservation and restoration of habitat, working with and supporting our fish and wildlife recreation for everyone, conducting fish and wildlife inventories, research and monitoring, propagating fish for stocking, and providing technical assistance and education. We talked a little bit about the appropriations for the Game of Fish Fund, but here's the general, or here's the overall budget last biennium for Fish and Wildlife Division. You can see it was about $167.4 million, with the majority of that coming from the Game of Fish Fund, but also 12.5% came from the general fund, with a little bit of 1%, a little bit over 1% from federal funds. We'll be going into great detail in these accounts and these funds as we present our budget and walk through our change items with you. So I just want to give you a little overview of what the account looks like for this division. Critical trend highlight that we're working with, and you'll hear a lot about, and I'm sure you already have, is dealing with habitat loss and fragmentation, are the wetlands and our loss of wetlands throughout the state. This slide just shows back in 1844, the wetlands that were there and 50-square-mile piece of Jackson County now or then, and then you can see it 100 years later in 1994. Working with the habitat, our conservation partners, one of the initiatives we're dealing with in this area and we talked about in the policy committee last week is our Working Lands Initiative. Working with our stakeholders, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, Nature Conservancy, Minnesota Waterfowl Association, and others, to try to create large complexes of wetlands and grasslands, I should say, to improve fish and wildlife habitat and enhance water quality. A big part of this program is working to keep land in private ownership and working with those landowners to make sure that what they're doing can maintain the productivity on their land but can also provide conservation benefits as well. This slide here shows a 4-square-mile piece of land. Only 15% of this slide is in public wildlife management. The other 85% is in private ownership. 10% of it has full easements on it. 25% has modified ag use. And 50% is actually in ag cropland. Working with the stakeholders and the local landowners in the areas out there, you'll see the gray, the shaded area of this state is what they consider the prairie pothole region of the state. But working with those landowners and producers in those areas to make sure that they know all the available options that are out there and what they can do to preserve not only habitat but make their land productive is something this initiative is really important, or the success of it lies on. So you probably hear more about that as we move forward, but it's a way to work, develop conservation techniques and habitat out there rather than having us buy all the land and manage it as state land. Some of the targets associated with this, a long-term goal is to protect an additional 2 million acres of prairie wetlands and grasslands, and that's out in the next 20, 30, 40 years. But the annual target we're looking to reach is to increase the number of these high-quality complexes through restoration and protection about 40,000 acres per year. Now, this is by all partners, private, state, conservation groups. So that's the type of measures we're going to try to be presenting to you as we pull our budgets together. Priority area in Fish and Wildlife Division also is the wildlife management areas, which the legislature over the past two bonding cycles has funded very greatly. Currently, we have about 1,400 wildlife management areas. Provides 1.2 million acres of public land for hunting, biking, and bird watching. The recommendations from a citizens committee that recently were published 2 years ago now, I guess, they recommend 700,000 acres of additional wildlife management area lands in the next 50 years. This is a lot of land. We're taking it one piece at a time, but the overall demand and need you can see is very huge. And part of the success of that will be working with landowners to make sure their adjoining lands are also providing the benefits. Moving into forestry, the core functions of Department of Forestry include protection, wildfire protection is our number one priority as a division and in this, as a department and the Division of Forestry. Protecting people, property, and natural resources from wildfire harm is something we take very seriously. Managing the 4.5 million acres of state forest land that we have for the multiple values that we talked about with our mission statement. Helping landowners and communities to restore and improve forests, providing seedlings and for conservation planting, and the implementation of the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. The Sustainable Forest Resources Act is set to expire this coming year, and one of our policy bills that you'll be seeing move forward is to remove that repealer language from that section of law. It provides for our Forest Resources Council and all of our management, sustainable management activities that we have there. Just as a side note, the Minnesota Forests support a $6.9 billion forest products industry, wildlife habitat, clean water, and recreation, which I'm sure you're all aware of. Talked a little bit about fire. This past year, we had a major fire season. It involved over 500 of our staff and 800 smoke chasers. Largest fire we've seen in over 100 years. That Cavity Lake fire in the Boundary Waters, which was from July 14th to the 22nd, burned over 30,000 acres at a cost of $11.3 million. When there is a wildfire, especially of that nature, it really changes the whole shift of the department, and we focus on those activities. And that shifting in our workforce is something we take seriously, and we have to maintain the ability to do. One of our issues in this and also all of our other divisions is the expertise that we'll be losing in the coming years. It's no different than any other thing in state government. The state government is going to be facing some changes in the next 5 to 10 years, and we're set to lose or scheduled to lose up to 20% of our wildfire expertise in the next 5 years, and working to make sure that we have new and qualified staff and we're capturing those. The wealth of knowledge that those people have is something we're trying to deal with as well.
Excuse me a moment. Yes. Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, this isn't specific to Minnesota, but there were some pretty significant fires in western United States this last fall. Was there any Minnesota equipment or firefighters that helped fight those fires? We have, a reciprocal arrangement where other states come and help us.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, yes. Actually, Minnesota, as Senator Saxog is aware of, houses the Minnesota Interagency Firefighting Center. I think that's right. Forestry. Where's Bob? Is that right? And this is a co-op. It's a federal co-op that we actually house and distribute firefighting supplies, materials, and staff and personnel throughout the Midwest area. So there's typically not a fire in the Midwest area or in the U.S., that we aren't involved with in somehow. So also our firefighting planes, we will loan out or lease out to other state governments and other governmental entities to help fight those fires as well.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, the fire appropriation is open and standing appropriation. Can you give the committee how much money was spent on fire suppression this last night?
Commissioner Meyer.
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, we will get that information to you. Maybe Mr. Mueller has that available. But that is a good point to bring up, and I was going to get to that in the budget slide. But we have an open appropriation for our firefighting activities, which means that as those dollars are needed, we have access to them. And as if it was ever to the point where we didn't have enough money available, we have basically the way that is we have access to as much money as we need for our firefighting activities. So I might have that in this slide coming up where our firefighting costs were. No, I don't actually, but we'll get that for you.
Okay, go ahead, please.
One of our major efforts that you may have heard about deals with forest certification project. Minnesota has the largest forest certification process, or the certificates actually, issued in the United States. And what this is there's two groups out there that come in, view our forests, our practices, what we're doing on the ground, the laws that we have related to forestry, and they certify that you're managing your wood or your forests in a sustainable manner. We've done this through both the FSC and the SFI, and it was a huge accomplishment, but it's one that ensures that the people who buy our wood products they know that our forest, that wood has been produced in a sustainable manner. There's many end users, Time Warner, for example, who will only buy timber that has been raised on certified land. So this is an industry, an economic driver that we took very seriously, and it was a huge accomplishment to certify the 4.8 million acres of state land through the dual certification.
So, Commissioner Meyer, is that 4.8, is that all of the state-administered forest lands, or is that just a portion of them?
That's all of our administered lands.
So they're all certified, state forest lands are certified. And then there's certification of private forests as well, aren't there?
Yes, give me a slide or two. We can talk.
Okay,
about
we'll get
that.
To that. Great.
Just briefly reviewing the budget for the Department of Forestry. 53%, you'll see, is general fund. This is one of our divisions. There are several divisions that I will highlight to you that are very much tied to the general fund appropriations our department receives. In the past, we have moved forward or tried to make these divisions so they aren't as dependent on general fund appropriations as we were dealing with reductions over the past couple of bienniums. We've created the Forest Management Investment Account in the Division of Forestry, which we'll talk a little bit about, where some of the receipts go from timber that is managed on state lands to make sure that those activities are funded, basically capturing our management costs off of the money we derive from selling the timber on the state lands. But we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks here. The role of private non-industrial forest lands, about, let me just get to my notes here. More than half of the wood that's harvested in the state of Minnesota comes from private land. And you'll see that represented on this slide here. And we're working with private landowners to do stewardship plans with them so that they can manage their wood and that they'll be eligible or they can go through certification process. But providing the technical assistance to over 147,000 individuals and organizations that own 35% of the state's forested land is one of our priorities in trying to ensure that those activities are done efficiently and cost-effectively is something we'll be taking. You'll be hearing about more in the coming weeks, but it's something that we take very seriously, that private, non-industrial private forest stewardship. I was going to use an acronym, but I thought I'd say what it was, actually. Is a activity that we take very seriously, and you'll hear more about. This kind of shows what our targets are. Fiscal year 07, we've targeted to complete 65,000 acres of forest stewardship plans with a proposed target in the future to complete 150,000 acres and a long-term target of working to work with landowners of over 2.3 million acres so that they have working forest stewardship plans. We've shown that by developing these stewardship plans with private landowners, they're more inclined to have their land harvested and managed for the long term, which provides those multiple benefits of conservation habitat and recreational activity.
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, is the department going to get back into the plan writing business then? Because you've been kind of depending on industry to do an awful lot of those forest stewardship plans. There used to be an appropriation in the budget prior to the old reset plan. The department actually provided a service to private landowners to write forest stewardship plans that was eliminated in the old pre-budget session. Anticipate something coming forward in the governor's budget that restores that program?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, it's our hope that it will, yes. I hope to be sitting here in a couple of weeks talking about those issues. So,
just generally, I don't want to get too much into the, the trees here, so to speak. Are the standards for forest stewardship plans similar to the certification standards for the public forests? Are they the sustainability guidelines for,
Madam Chair,
forest certification?
Typically what we try to do is work with those landowners so they understand what the certification processes are, what the requirements are, so they can line up as much as possible. So then they can go and have their land certified. We don't do the certification for the private landowners, but we help them prepare to get their land certified so that they would be eligible for certification.
Okay. Mr. Mueller.
Madam Chair, going back to Senator Bach's question before on firefighting expenses, I dug up the DNR's background budget information, and at least according to this right now, about looks like the DNR spends about $40.5 million in the last biennium on firefighting, and about $32.5 million of that came from the general fund. So it looks like some of it comes from maybe the Natural Resources Fund, but maybe Bob or someone from DNR will clarify that later. And of that, about $9 million per year is open appropriation. It looks like they've been at that or a little bit below that in previous years. But
Senator Saxog?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, as long as we're talking about certification, I note from page 14 that there's about the same amount of county tax forfeit lands as there are state lands. Do you have any information about just about how many of those are certified?
Madam Chair, Senator Sachs, I don't have that information at hand right now, but I will circle back with you and let the committee know what those...
It's a significant amount, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I think, yeah, that firefighting information is pretty... That's really astonishing how much money we're talking about. And it would be interesting to see some trends, if you could provide us some data on the last 10 years or so, where that's, if that's really going up, or is it...
It depends, Madam Chair. It really depends on the year and the amount of fires that we have to manage and deal with. So,
Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, it might be helpful if the department with that information can provide us with some additional information on how much money is being collected from other states or from the federal government. I assume we're charging the federal government for something like the Cali Lake fire. In addition to the general fund appropriation, how much money that is coming back.
Well, and in addition to that, do we fight fires on private forest lands or just public lands?
Madam Chair, we fight forest fires depending on where they're at.
Wherever they burn. And so I guess another question, I don't know if there's any, if there's private lands, is there any private contribution to help pay for that from the landowners?
I think we charge private landowners if they don't have a building permit or a burning permit. I think we charge them whatever the cost of fighting.
We've charged them the cost of a permit?
Well, yeah. If they cause the fire.
If they cause the fire?
Right.
We might want to hear more about that later when we get into those details of the budget.
Thank you. Moving forward, a critical trend highlight deals with the land parcelization, something we talked a little bit about in the beginning, and also related to firefighting costs as our large-scale forests become fragmented and cut up into 40-acre parcels or whatever you want to call. The firefighting costs and the cost of the local units of government to provide fire, ambulance, all of those other costs dramatically increase as well. One of the challenges we see, it provides diminished value as habitat, decreases our ability to manage these woods or these areas as large-scale forests, decreases the access for recreation. I already talked about the timber harvesting, and you can see water quality impairments coming from those types of developmental issues out there.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, just on that particular issue, I've hunted up north for 55 years. 2 years ago, land were in New Ulm. They got a cabin right next to us. They hunt there. All at once, I see these big lease signs by the Minneapolis Hunting Club, and a lot of us are not very happy with that. You're taking away hunting ground from somebody who lives in southern Minnesota, drives up to a cabin, and it's hunted there for years. Now all at once, that big paper company think they want to get the money. The ordinary person can't afford the lease. You can't afford the lease for 4 or 5 days. I'm just wondering what the DNR is doing to help that. If you want to encourage young people to hunt, they got to have a place to hunt. I know it's a problem, but it's something that really, really bugs the heck out of me, and we need to take a serious look at that. Maybe we need to lease that ourselves with our own state money. I'm all for that if we can do something.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, I appreciate your comments because that is one of the huge issues that the department not only faces but all of our citizens of the state face. Forest Legacy last year in the bonding bill was our number one priority to receive funding for the Forest Legacy program, which would leverage substantial non-state funds to purchase conservation easements on large-scale forests. And if I just bump ahead here, you can see on this slide here, dealing with the Forest Legacy, our fiscal year 2008 target is to acquire 50,000 to 75,000 acres of permanent forest conservation easements through this partnership activity. And with any luck, keeping our fingers crossed by before first committee deadline, the end of the first quarter, we should have in place about a 50,000-acre deal up in Senator Sachs's district to protect these lands exactly as you're talking about. But we need to continue funding the program. I know the LCCMR recommendations has some funds for the Forest Legacy Program as it comes out of the committee. And also, as we move into the bonding cycle next year, it's something we really need to talk about. How do we protect these large blocks of land? I know there's also competing interests among, you know, economic development, working with the counties to make sure that they maintain tax on land on the tax rolls. But the Working Lands Initiative, I think, provides an example on how to do that. Forest Legacy is another example on how to do that in the forested regions of the state. Being able to purchase or bid on lands as it comes up is something that we're talking about. We may have to come in with a policy change as well. Right now, we have to go through specific procedures to purchase land. Before we can purchase lands through forestry, they have to be part of the state. They don't have to be, but we like to make sure that they're part of the state forest boundaries. But we cannot go to the auctions. The no trespassing signs you see, they're potlatch. The real estate owners are starting to sell this land right away. We can't go in there as a participant in a bid or an auction as a state right now. And maybe that's something we need to explore. But developing a toolkit for us to deal with this deparcelization of land and protect the heritage in the northern part of the state is something we're very concerned about.
Senator Dill.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it's nice to buy up the development rights on 50 to 75,000 acres of land, but that's only two or three townships of land. And the fact of the matter is government doesn't have enough money to buy up all these development rights. I think the way you've got to solve this problem is through planning and zoning. We always think that's a local issue, but we had the 1991 Wetland Conservation Act, which is basically a statewide planning and zoning ordinance for the whole state to protect wetlands and prevent them from being drained. And I think we've got to think about something like that in terms of preventing urban sprawl, protecting the fragmentation of the forest land in northern Minnesota, and to prevent irresponsible development out across the agricultural areas of this state, which interfere with the ability of farmers to farm.
Keep me from spending Senator my Rock.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, potlatch, I think I read recently in the paper, is going to sell off 120,000 acres of its land in Minnesota. I expect it's going to be of a fragmented nature. Is the department considering any kind of an initiative where the state might potentially bond or something to purchase that land, any kind of a budget initiative at all?
Madam Chair, Senator Bach, at this point in time, no, we aren't. We need to come back. We have discussed some policy-related changes that we may need to do to deal with the parcelization, the checkerboard patterns. I had a meeting with Senator Saxhagen and other individuals before session started to try to figure out how to do this, and we're still working on those things. But it's something I think we need to come back and we need to go back and discuss and possibly bring something forward to you.
All right. Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. Forest Legacy is very important to us, and it's something that we're very proud of our accomplishments, but as you can see from this conversation, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Moving on to Ecological Services. Division of Ecological Services is responsible for collecting and managing our ecological data, providing technical assistance in managing environmental review services, protecting and restoring native plant and wildlife communities, and regulating activities that impact native plant and wildlife communities. That last bullet's kind of a long-winded term for invasive species management, probably. If you look at it that way, something we'll be talking about in the policy committee here in the coming day, tomorrow, actually. So it's something the invasive species issues we'll learn tomorrow and we'll be discussing in future meetings are issues, as you saw on that one slide, that will have a direct impact on providing the access and the ability to outdoor recreation to individuals here in the future, and it does right now. Just as a side note, nearly 2 million Minnesotans actively feed, watch, or photograph wildlife, which is 54% of the people in the state, number two in the nation. So just kind of a little tidbit for you there.
Who's number one?
Vermont.
I'm curious. Vermont.
So okay. You can see just a budget overview. 20.5% general fund, game and fish 17%, natural resources 16%. We'll be getting more in depth into the budget of ecological services in the coming weeks. One of the strategic priority highlights dealing with ecological services, this is where most of our activities related to clean water legacy are housed. Director Fanmuller does a great job working with our stakeholders to try to identify the needs that they have for the technical assistance out there and coordinating our activities with the PCA, Department of Agriculture, and Bowser to work with them and identifying waters, develop their total maximum daily load plans, implement the plans, and protect the waters. So you'll see the technical assistance services that we provide in this division really reach out to all of our stakeholders to help them do the work on the ground that needs to be done. And actually, one of the highlights that we were able to do this past year was to work with our sister agencies to help. We actually hired someone from Pollution Control Agency to help us identify how we can be more effective and more up to speed and provide better services to our clients out there related to clean water legacy and impaired water. So it's something we look forward to providing in the future. Talking about invasive species, native plant animal species displaced. You can see the top slide there are invasive aquatic plants. On the bottom, the sea lamprey, the spiny water flea, and zebra mussels. Really, these are impacting the habitat for fish and wildlife, the water-based recreational activities, and industrial water uses. One of the things I hope to show people and educate folks on are the invasive species of carp that are coming into our region and some of the threats that they present to boaters, water skiers, jet skiers, people out of canoers. Are pretty scary, actually, to be out on a water body and have this huge fish jump out of the water. And the chance of hitting you in the head is something I don't want to have as a contact sport in the state. So highlight for the Ecological Services, our invasive species program. Our target is to limit the spread of Eurasian water milfoil to no more than 10 lakes each year. We're working on that. We do a lot of our activities. You can see in the upper right-hand corner, the boat launch inspections. It's something we do a lot of. I think 18,000 hours last season alone dealing with boat ramps. Senator Rummel, your district, White Bear Lake, we're there constantly, Lake Minnetonka, the big water bodies, but also outstate. How do we deal with those water bodies in greater Minnesota and prevent the spread to other lakes? Moving on to the Division of Waters, you can see the Division of Waters, their main goal is to maintain the physical integrity of Minnesota's waters by collecting water data, regulating activities through permitting. Public waters use permits are all functioned or housed in Division of Waters, and providing support to local units of government on water management issues and protecting public safety. Flood control is a big activity in this division. About 12,000 lakes, 10 million acres of wetlands, 90,000 miles of rivers, and 750 wells that we use to monitor the groundwater in the state. This division is probably our heaviestly general funded, if that makes any sense, division throughout the department. 78% of the activities for this division come from the general fund, with the other next largest sources from federal funding dollars. Critical trend highlight, flood damage. This is a picture up in Oslo, Minnesota, during the Red River flood. The costs from the Red River flood in 1997 alone exceeded $1.5 billion in damages to property. Major floods have occurred in 97, 2001, 2002, and 2004, and our flood hazard mitigation program, though heavily funded through the past bonding cycles, still needs more funding to make sure that we protect the communities. Another strategic priority highlight is a water resources information that this division works with, developing and maintaining our county ground geologic atlases and regional hydrologic assessment programs is a real key to how we plan for use of our water. Information on geology and groundwaters for counties and regions. Right now, we've assessed about 76% of the state's population and 39% of the state's area. But developing these plans really is the backbone for our appropriation permits and water use programs throughout the state.
Madam Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
This might deem me Senator's silly question. But is the number of lakes in Minnesota constant?
Constant?
Whatever, does that change? Up, down? Have we always had 11,842 lakes?
You know, Senator Anderson?
Senator Meyer.
Senator Chaudhry, we go through in our public waters inventory process, I think is where that number comes from roughly. You know, what one person calls a lake and what officially might be a lake are two different things probably. But the number is pretty constant. We haven't done that inventory for a while, but.
And is that the same for wetlands? What's the trend on acreage of wetlands?
Again, I think if you look at the the statutory definition of wetlands, what may be delineated by the wetlands inventory fluctuates a little bit. I can get you some more detailed information on that and what the numbers may have been historically in the past.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members, moving forward into enforcement. The Division of Enforcement protects our natural resources and public safety through quality education and law enforcement activities. Their primary duties include game and fish enforcement, resource protection, recreation enforcement, safety training and education, public safety and service. You can see the numbers of users that we have throughout the state. Snowmobiles, we have about 270,000 registered snowmobiles, a little bit over 300,000 registered recreational vehicles, and over 40,000 students per year attend DNR education safety classes each year. This includes our firearm safety, snowmobile training, ATV training, boat and water safety programs. Just last year, we graduated our 1 millionth student through our firearm safety program, which was established in 1955. But to reach that milestone was quite an accomplishment, and we were very happy, and we celebrated that a little bit. But the firearm safety program is a key component to the activities that enforcement does, and also making sure that our customers know not only about firearm safety, but about conservation, habitat protection, and sustainable use of our natural resources. The Division of Forestry is funded last budget cycle, roughly about $61.2 million. You can see a little bit over 60% from the Game and Fish Fund, 23% from the Natural Resources Fund, and 11% from the general resource or the general fund, I should say. One of our highlights, and perhaps one of our greatest success stories for the past couple of years, is what we've done about enforcement staffing. Through attrition, as any other agency has, you always have fluctuations in numbers. But for the first time in many years, we're almost at a full complement with our DNR enforcement program. We've graduated. Over the last 3 years, we've hired and stationed over 53 conservation officers through our academy training process. And you can see how we've reduced our vacancies, that were 40 in 2003 to 10 this year. And we're going to have another academy starting this spring. Get that down to close to zero, but then we always have retirements and things like that. But for the first time, we're getting close to filling those stations that we need to have filled throughout the state. One of the priority pilots that enforcement has done in the past years is wetland protection priority, enforcing the Wetlands Protection Act through aerial surveys, trying to identify areas of the state where people have been doing work without public waters works permits or may be doing impacts in our wetlands that are against the law. 2005, we started this and focused primarily in wetland destruction in southern Minnesota. Last year, we expanded it with enhanced educational and media coverage. And in the we've identified 516 possible impacts with strong media coverage and growing public awareness and acceptance. Hopefully people will understand that it is against the law to do work in these wetlands without permits, and they'll know the resources where they need to go to their local water and soil conservation districts and state agencies to really get the assistance they need before they start work. You can see this picture here, the area of excavation and the skid steer was just one of the things that we uncovered as we're doing these investigations. Moving on to the Division of Lands and Minerals, and while I'm at it, I should mention to you folks that our director, Marty Vadas, is housed in Hibbing. So if you need to get a hold of him, that's the best place to find him. Or if we need to meet with him, we may be doing a conference call. But the Iron Range is really where all of our lands and minerals activities take place, or many of the minerals activities, I should say, take place. And when Director Bill Bryce, who many of you had the opportunity to work with, retired, we had the opportunity to bring Marty on board, but we wanted to leave him up in Hibbing because he can work with the clients and customers up there firsthand rather than having to drive back and forth all the time. So, Lands and Minerals help manage real estate transactions of 5.5 million acres of state-owned lands, manage mineral activities on 12 million acres of state-owned mineral rights, and you can see enforce the mine land reclamation regulations on taconite and peat mining operations, dealing with over 250,000 acres of public and private land. Just a little aside note, Minnesota's first in taconite production, a $1.2 billion industry, sixth in sand and gravel, and third in horticultural peat production. You can see this slide shows their budget, $54.1 million for the past biennium, with 61.1% from the general fund, including PILT. PILT, if you look in statute 477A.11 to .145, deal with the PILT payments that are out there. What this is, it's a payment that we make, payment in lieu of taxes to the counties and local units of government, or primarily counties, I should say. Right now, it's based on 0.75% of the appraised value of land, or $3 per acre adjusted for inflation. Now, that adjusted amount last year, or the last time we adjusted, which was last summer, is $4.252 per acre. Most, if not all, of the counties have opted this past cycle. It's comes up every 5 years for the counties to change the way that they get appropriated money, but most of them now are on the 0.75% of the appraised value of land, which has brought the PILT payments from fiscal year 06, which was $13.4 million, to a number you'll see in this coming biennium budget, $19.7 million, but it's projected to grow in 2009 to $20.7 million. So then it'll be corrected again, and you'll see probably a large jump. It kind of goes level, and then 5 years it jumps up based upon the revaluation of the land, and then goes level and goes up again. But PILT is something that we feel is important to us, but also it kind of skews the budget for lands and minerals, as you can see. Taking $20 million out of there is going to bring that down to $34 million roughly. So just something to keep in mind as we talk about the land and minerals budget in the coming weeks. Critical trend,
Excuse me, Senator Dill.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, at 0.75% on $3,000 an acre land, that would come to about $22 an acre. Is that roughly? Is that what you said? They have a choice between taking 0.75% of the market value?
Yes, or, Madam Chair.
Yeah. So how does that compare with what what the county would collect otherwise, a county school district and the township? Is it pretty close to what they normally get?
Madam Chair, Senator Dill, I don't have that breakout of what kind of tax classification that would break it down into. I can look into that for you and get it to you. And again, it depends if the land would be classified as seasonal rec, ag land. It's about, the last numbers that I saw, it was a little bit less than what the homesteaded rate would be.
Okay.
But I can look into that for you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, moving forward, one of the critical trend highlights for the Division of Lands and Minerals dealing with the global metal demand. As the Asian areas of our world continue to develop into their industrial revolution, the demands for raw materials have skyrocketed. You can see just since January of 04 to this October, nickel prices have gone up dramatically. This slide shows copper and zinc on one end and nickel on the other. But it's the metals market and the demand for metals globally has just grown. It's just amazing. And our iron ore deposits are very rich in some of these materials, and we're working with people to see if they can sustainably mine some of those things. And you're seeing mining activities become more and more prevalent on the Iron Range once again. So something we take very seriously in helping reduce or helping provide the fiduciary responsibility to the school trust, which is another area that we need to talk about a little bit. But the school trust fund lands, many of them have large, substantial mineral deposits on them. And the school trust, which we're entitled to maintain and manage, is the beneficiary of those minerals activities. So we'll be talking about that. And this slide shows a little bit of that right here, talking about mineral lease income. It's our responsibility to maximize mineral lease revenues to the permanent school fund, permanent university trust fund, and local units of government having tax forfeited minerals. You can just see the growth that we've experienced from 04 and what we're projecting through 09 there. Moving on to parks and recreation, the Division of Parks and Recreation's core functions are to preserve, restore, and interpret the state's natural and cultural resources, provide nature-based recreation opportunities for current and future generations, and operate and maintain the state's 67 state parks and six recreation areas. They also maintain and manage our state forest campgrounds as well. Last year, we had about 8 million annual state park visitors, generating $14.5 million in annual revenue. Minnesota is in the top 10, or I should say 10 of Minnesota's top 35 tourism attractions are in state parks, and one in three Minnesotans visit a state park each year. You can see once again, general fund for its parks out of $80 million last biennium, 48% roughly came from the general fund. Natural Resources Fund, 35.3%, small part of federal. Environment Natural Resource Funds, those are lottery, or I should say Environment Natural Resource Trust Fund dollars that we've received from the commission. One of the critical trends that we have within parks, expanding development land use changes surrounding parks is an issue we deal with constantly. People will live next to a park. It's a very marketable piece of property to be able to say that your backyard abuts up next to a state park. No neighbors will ever be behind you. It's something that people look for sometimes if they can. Harmful invasive species threatening our natural communities. This is something that we see and we're trying to deal with very seriously within our parks through our management activities and our day-to-day activities. The recreational demand pressures that we're facing within our Parks and Recreational Division, the aging and more diverse populations, our clients, and more urban populations that present changing demands in what they want to see within our park system. And just being able to make sure that our visitors are able to experience highly value, visitors, what they value are highly, start over, visitors highly value park beauty, facilities, natural resources, trails, and education. So providing these activities for the park users, our clients, your constituents, is a big challenge for us, something we take very seriously. This slide here just shows one of our priority highlights, the protection and management of our natural and cultural resources in state parks. Show the areas, acres of habitat we're managing through prescribed burn, and areas of the active restoration in the state park system, reforestation, native prairie planting, things of that nature. Moving on to trails and waterways. We have over 1,300 miles of state trail, including about 500 miles of paved bike trails. We rank number 4 in the nation for the number of registered boats, 845,000. Over 1,500 boat accesses and 26 designated canoe and boating routes. The mission of the Trails and Waterways, as we spoke about a little bit earlier, is to create recreational opportunities through trails and water recreation facilities, focusing or dealing with non-motorized recreation, water recreation, and motorized recreation. If you think back to those three circles that we had in the beginning, Director Boa has the unique challenges to make sure that each user group has something that they can utilize and call their own, but yet they all have to interconnect as well. So it's something that developing our systems out there, our trail systems, our user systems, we take into mind working with our stakeholder groups. Each one of those funding sources often have, or they do have, a user group, kind of an organized user group associated with them, cross-country skiers. Last biennium, we came in and established a horse trail pass. at the request of the horseback riders groups in the state of Minnesota, they wanted to see a dedicated source of funding established for their trail system. So we sat down with them, and they kind of came up with some ideas. We helped them manage them and actually passed into law a sticker system for horses that will be implemented this coming riding season. So they have a dedicated source of funding for their trails that are out there, develop more trails, provide the maintenance, and things of that nature. You can see Trails and Waterways Division, only about 4% general fund related activities in this budget, in this division, with roughly 73% of the budget coming from those actual users of our trail systems that are out there. Federal dollars as well, we receive substantial amount of federal dollars through transportation and other related bills for our trail system throughout the state. So wherever we can, we try to maximize our funding that we receive through the state by making sure or using those appropriations where there's federal funding appropriations tied to them as well to leverage other dollars.
Senator Fredrickson.
Madam Chair, Assistant Commissioner Myers, some of us are going to the permit system for horse trails. Some of us at the table were wondering which end of the horse you can see.
Madam Chair, Senator Fredrickson, no comment.
We just heard another.
By which end of the rider?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferguson, on a more serious note, we did work with the stakeholders there to try to develop a pass system that would work, that was functional for them, and we're in the process of finalizing that. But it'll be similar to a name tag, possibly, that you wear around your neck. We don't want to put a sticker on a bridle or anything like that. But so working with our user groups to make sure that what we come up with works for them is just a way, another example of how we work with our stakeholders to make sure that we aren't coming up with solutions that don't work. So, thank you.
Chair, Senator Fredrickson.
The tag around the neck, is that around the rider or around the
horse? Senator Anderson, around the rider. Thank you. Moving into critical trend highlight, motorized and non-motorized recreation that I spoke of. Increasing motorized vehicle registrations, you can see back in 84 we had 12,000 ATVs. Actually, these were the three-wheel machines that we were calling all-terrain vehicles at that point in time. We're now in 2006. We have 240 or over 240,000 of these machines. Also, the increasing demand for bike and walking and hiking trails. About 30% of Minnesotans bicycle, 54% of them walk and hike, providing opportunities where they make sense, where we can do them. Is very important to us. You can see the slide on the bottom representing a few of these stakeholders, the hikers, motorized, and also the non-motorized users. One of the highlights that we have here, a strategic priority highlight, dealing with public water access. Our targets, you can see what we're looking for there. Our target is to acquire new access sites statewide with a special emphasis on the Mississippi River and our large lake bodies. We need many, often on the larger lakes throughout the state, we need to provide access not only for people to get on the lake, but also to get off the lake. When a storm rolls in, we have to make sure that people have the ability to seek protection and find shelter. So you'll see and hear from our boat access programs on those issues. Moving on to the Office of Management and Budget, or Operations Support, as it's titled in our organizational slide. The operations support includes the Commissioner's Office, our Office of Management and Budget Services, Human Resources, Management Resources, which takes care of not only our fleet, but all of the different buildings we have throughout the state, our Information and Education Division, and our Regional Operations. Integrated policy and budget activities is something we strive for across all divisions. Results management, adaptive management techniques, learning from our mistakes and moving forward and making sure that we can change and be adaptive to those things as we see them. Sound asset management, informational technology leadership, providing a safe and productive workforce, all while maintaining our fund integrity is some of the things that we strive for with this division. Fund integrity is something we'll be talking about in depth as we go through our budget, making sure that the accounts that we're utilizing are only spent on those accounts. You'll hear about the deer and bear management account. You'll hear about so many accounts. We'll see if we can get you a little flashcard system or something to get you through it. But also the safe and productive workforce. Workforce safety is something we take very seriously. We have almost 3,000 employees throughout the state, and many of them are involved in non-typical state employee activities, working in the fields and streams and in the forests, provide unique challenges, and we need to make sure that they're trained, equipped, and operating in a safe manner. We do a lot of training. We send out periodic safety messages, and it's something we take very seriously through our management resource activities. The funding, very briefly, for this division, you can see about $47.5 million in FY06-07, kind of spread out throughout all the places. Environment Natural Resources Fund, 35% roughly. General Fund, 22%. 12% Game and Fish. Natural Resources, 13%. 11% from federal funds, and a small percent from Special Revenue Fund. A couple of the critical trends we like to highlight through this division, integrated resource management, making sure we're doing more extensive collaboration and more integrated solutions or developing these integrated solutions to our complex natural resource problems, advances in science, technology, and information management, increase our needs to address natural resource challenges. Our workforce, we talked about, over 44% of our employees are 50 and older, which is something we need to really capture that knowledge and try to have them making sure that our next generation is ready to go. And accountability for results. Our citizens have higher expectations for government performance and fiscal integrity, and it's something we're proud of. We have a budget oversight committee, which I neglected to talk about, which is a group of citizens who oversee all of our basically dedicated funds. We have a game, and it's most of our game and fish fund programs, trout and salmon, pheasant, deer and bear. We have groups of citizens who oversee our expenditure activities related to these activities, and they make recommendations. They have a report, which you'll probably be hearing about, we'll be presenting to you, or they will be presenting to you, hopefully in the future, to talk about what they've come up with and what they see are challenges and successes. Some of our organizational results, one we talked about, the strategic conservation agenda, but one that we like to talk about is our fleet management activities. At the beginning of the administration 4 years ago, we came in and identified that our fleet payments, we owed about $11 million in, if you want to call it, car payments, make it simple. One of our priorities was to reduce that fleet debt. We were paying about $500,000 a year just on interest. So going through and trying to look at how we manage our fleet, how we allocate our fleet, how we use our fleet, we were able to retire that debt last summer. So now we have an extra, no, I shouldn't say extra, we have $500,000 that we were spending on debt service that we can use for conservation-related activities. So how we bill, how we use our resources, creating pools of equipment for people to use going across divisions is one way we were able to solve some of these costs. Another one, reducing our attorney general costs by actually having people sit down and look at the statutes rather than have a knee-jerk reaction to get an attorney general review on things. We were able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars doing that. Going to the new internet protocol phone system like you have here saves us about $120,000 a year. Moving into the dedicated accounts, the forest management investment account, We established for 2 years a mineral management investment account, which allowed us to capture our management costs from those receipts. And the facilities management account, looking at our management activities and capturing the management costs off of the revenues generated from those activities is something that we are utilizing to reduce our general fund expenditures. The mineral management account was only done for 2 years. We're coming back with I don't know if we'll redo that again or not. There were some concerns about trust fund-related issues with the mineral management account. So funding of our minerals division is something we'll be talking about more in depth in the coming weeks. Just a summary of our big drivers, habitat loss and fragmentation, as we talked about, clean water and sustainable use, providing access to natural resources, harmful invasive species that we're dealing with and trying to reduce the spread of those, our changing forest products industry. We didn't talk too much about that, but I'm sure you're all aware of the news, the recent mill shutdowns the past summer and fall in the northern part of the state. We reconvened the governor's Forestry Competitiveness Task Force, which I'm hoping you'll be able to hear the recommendations from that group in the future. Some of them will be represented in our budget. The off-highway vehicle use management and regulation, where we are now, managed use on managed trails, is where we're working to provide access to those people, making sure that all of our stakeholders are at the table and moving forward with us. Changing recreation participation demographics and changing demographics are something we take very seriously. Hunter recruitment and retention, we'll be talking about that this session a little bit. How can we, not only in hunting, but in our parks and trail systems and everywhere, how can we make sure that people are getting the experiences that we were able to experience when we were growing up? Climate change, trying to prepare for long-term changes within our state, making sure that our natural resource assets are able and prepared and managed in a way to deal with that. And also alternative energy. I know Senator Vickerman's committee is talking about alternative energy this afternoon, I believe. And it's something we're very interested in. How can we manage our lands, our state's land assets, to provide the fuel source for cellulosic and other types of energy production alternatives that hopefully will become realities in the very near future? So I think the department has a large role in those activities as well. Conservation, habitat, and energy production, to me, it's a natural fit. So those are just some of the big drivers we face. We could be here for a lot longer talking about them, but in an effort to get you folks on schedule, this is a way that I view things, and the department tries to view things: interconnected resources, integrated solutions. It's a little bit different than the three circles we had, but really it connects everything together using the forestry example. Forest coverage, our forested lands, not only provide timber, but utilizing those forests in a working way, provide habitat for wildlife, wildlife viewing, also provide, making sure we do it in a sustainable manner, provides river health, which provides habitat for fisheries and fishing opportunities. These kind of double circles, if you want to call it, is a good way to try to think about all of the divisions and the work that the department does. It's all interconnected and related. And identifying those opportunities where they are to provide multiple benefits and interests to multiple stakeholders is something we take very seriously. With that, thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, I asked Senator Chaudhry the other day how many people work for the DNR. Do you have any idea? I don't know if Chaudhry had a chance to look that up. I know how many work for the Health and Human Services, and there's several thousand. How many work for in a total package? You know, if you don't, I'd like to have that sometime when you have.
Madam Chair, Senator Vickerman, it's roughly between 2,800 and 3,000 full-time equivalents. I can get you the exact number. It's something we'll come back with in our budget documents. A lot of those are seasonal employees, and some of them, again, are temporary employees as well. So we try to get it to a full-time equivalent number, which I think is easiest for you to understand, but we'll prepare those numbers, and I'll try to break them out a little bit more for you.
Thank you. Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I apologize. Got you a little bit late and then looked through your handout. I didn't see any slide on it, so I'm going to ask the question. If you covered it, forgive me.
That can take in a lot.
Do you have, or can you provide us with a history of land acquisition? I'm curious to know what has been the land acquisition history, how much you acquired and what you acquire, and whether there's any kind of trend that you
Madam Chair, Senator, certainly we can. It's going to be by type: wildlife management area, forest, parks. Is that the kind of information you're looking for?
Senator Hand.
Madam Chair and Commissioner, yes, I guess it's useful to know what we're using the land for, but I'm also interested in knowing just in aggregate, you know, are we acquiring land at a pace that is similar to what we've done in the past? Are we acquiring it at a more aggressive rate? At least I'd like to know what the facts are.
Okay, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Vickerman, maybe when we do the budget overview,
you should take your
and you identify FTEs per division or per program, if you could tell us how many of those are vacant positions, how many are real people, that might be helpful.
Okay. Senator Dill.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, Assistant Commissioner Meyer, you indicated there were 516 suspected wetland violations as you were flying around the state checking on things. How many actual violations were there after you got on the ground and checked it?
Mr. Meyer.
Senator Anderson, Senator Dale, I don't have the exact details on that. I will work to pull those together. In that program, what we would do is work with the local units of government, Board and Water, or the Water and Soil Conservation Districts, and let them pass that information on to them and work with them as to what we saw or what we've identified. But I'll see if I can pull together a summary document on what our findings were. Or I will pull together a summary document for you.
Great. Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, in reference to what Senator Hahn was talking about, and Senator Hahn, I might reference this to you. Are you talking about net loss and net gain? Because I know a lot of this is exchanges, too.
Senator Hahn.
Madam Chair, yes, Senator Saxhog. I'd like to get some feel for just what the pattern has been of land acquisition. I think you're right. It would be good to know if we've been keeping about the same or if we've acquired a net increase or we've lost land. I'm just new to the committee and trying to get a handle on what the lay of the land is. So.
All right, great. Well, lots of questions, lots of homework for you. Thank you so much. This has been a really good place to start, very comprehensive. And we appreciate all the division heads being here with us today. And nice to get names and faces. So I know committee members, if you have a particular interest, you know who to talk to. And on Thursday, we'll be hearing from the Pollution Control Agency for an overview as well. With that, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you.